Let's start where the most immediate military risk sits right now, and that's the broader Middle East arc, running from Tehran through Beirut to the Gaza Strip. The Pentagon yesterday released video of U.S. strikes on Iran, which is a significant communications choice. When you release strike footage, you're not just documenting military action, you're sending a deterrence message to multiple audiences simultaneously. You're telling Tehran, you're telling regional proxies, and frankly, you're telling Congress, this happened, it was precise, and we can do it again.
The context for that footage is critical. Secretary of State Rubio was up on Capitol Hill briefing lawmakers on what he's describing as a U.S.-Iran deal framework aimed at barring Iran from enriched uranium. Legislators from both parties pressed him hard on two things: Iran's potential oil windfall from any sanctions relief, and the unresolved questions about what barring enrichment actually means in practice. Does it mean zero enrichment, like the original 2015 JCPOA demanded? Does it mean capping enrichment at a certain percentage? These distinctions are enormous from a weapons development standpoint.
The bipartisan skepticism is worth noting. You had Republican hawks who think any deal is too weak, and Democratic members who wanted assurances about verification mechanisms. Rubio is essentially trying to thread a needle where he can claim diplomatic progress while also just having authorized or supported a military strike. That tension is real, and it's going to shape whatever deal text eventually emerges.
Layered on top of this is the Lebanon situation. CENTCOM Chief Michael Carrilla visited Beirut as a proposed Lebanon stabilization deal faces outright rejection from both Hezbollah and Amal. That's essentially the two dominant Shia political military movements in Lebanon saying no simultaneously. Carrilla's visit signals that Washington isn't giving up on a framework, but it's hard to construct a durable security arrangement when the most heavily armed non-state actor in the country is actively opposed.
And then you have Syria's newly positioned spy chief. This is the post-Assad government, standing up at a UN counterterrorism conference and naming Israel as a top threat, which is a remarkable statement from a government that just over a year ago was fighting for its survival against groups that had Iranian and Hezbollah backing. The speed with which the new Syrian leadership is calibrating its public positioning tells you something about the internal pressures they're navigating from regional neighbors.
McCarthy's comments on Hillary Clinton backing Trump's Gaza plan added an interesting bipartisan note to an otherwise deeply fractured foreign policy landscape. When you have a former Democratic presidential nominee endorsing the framework of a Republican administration's approach to Gaza, it either signals genuine convergence on what the post-conflict structure should look like, or it's a political repositioning for a domestic audience. Probably some of both.
And then, Shell's warning about the Strait of Hormuz needs to be understood in this context. Shell projects LNG demand growing 65% by 2050. That's nearly 700 million tons annually, but is flagging near-term supply contraction risk, specifically because of Hormuz disruption. About 20% of the world's LNG transits through that strait. If military tensions between the U.S. and Iran continue escalating, the insurance premiums alone on Hormuz transiting tankers start to reshape global energy economics in ways that affect everything from German heating bills to Japanese industrial output.
The energy market is not pricing in a worst-case Hormuz scenario right now. You can see that in the relatively calm futures picture. But the gap between market pricing and actual risk is worth watching closely heading into the second half of 2026.